From Las Vegas, Nevada, close to the Kingdom of Nye, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM, and we are here at the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference and broadcasting from the studios of KXNT, our monster affiliate here in Las Vegas. And in a moment, Linda Moulton Howe sits in with me as we do this incredible show with a number of guests throughout the evening. So I'll be back with Linda in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Linda Moulton Howe is an Emmy Award-winning television producer, investigative reporter, and author who goes directly to the men and women at the forefront of science and environmental challenges. She's a key speaker here at the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference and is co-anchoring tonight's Coast to Coast show with me here in Las Vegas. Hey, Linda, how are you?
It is so good to see your eyes again, and you're wearing this great chocolate striped shirt for Coast listeners. You look great. And it's fun to be back because I think this is one of the most important conferences that's held every year.
You know, when I had an opportunity to speak to so many people who are at the conference tonight, you could tell how darn serious they are about this subject of UFOs and crash retrievals. And it's really, to me, someone who has devoted his life to investigating these stories, you too, Linda, it's really sobering to see people out there that care so much about this subject.
And you know why? It's because Ryan and I and everybody else, we know that we literally have a government that has been lying for at least 60 years.
Throughout this evening, we're going to bring you a number of guests who will be talking about this disclosure attempt and also what else has been going on in this field of ufology. Linda, you handled also just in a very professional manner and in-depth manner the Stephenville, Texas UFO case of about a year ago, so much so that you became one of our half hours that will appear on the Sci-Fi show the week of November 16th.
And isn't this something that, George, it's going to air, as I understand it, November 19th,
your
basically.
Segment, yeah.
Yeah, in across the country. And we've got 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific and midnight in the mountain and I think 11 p.m. in California. And the thing about it is, here we are. We're talking in November of 2008. This is going to air in just a week or so. And yet, we did this show about events that it started on New Year's Day 2008 in Stephenville. And to have them erupt again in the fall of 2008, yeah. And in some ways, as bizarre as January was, the descriptions this round, which went on for almost an entire week, I was getting calls literally every night from people in Stephenville or Granbury or that area, and they're saying, Linda, they're standing out in their yard. Linda, I'm watching. And I would get these descriptions. And I think the most incredible is the son of the Channel 7 owner of the TV station there. And he said, we're watching jets. They're flashing and they're moving. And there's this big white light. And below the white light, there's a red light. And the jets are going right now as I'm talking to you. And Linda, the flashing lights, they've disappeared. Where did they go? Well, does this mean some standard operation procedure, the jets would shut off all of their flashing lights as they approached some kind of an unknown? Or does it mean that something else happened in the sky? And I have been talking with several people in Texas. I'm talking with Angela Joyner. We're trying to find out what exactly did happen between the jets and all these lights.
Angela was a reporter who got knocked off the newspaper because she wanted to continue investigating this, and they said no.
That's exactly right. She's trying to find out more. We're also going through and trying to get more radar, and we're doing a lot of stuff right now, but the descriptions of the eyewitnesses, there was a woman working in one of the FEMA emergency offices, and I talked to her, and she said, we got a call from, it was one of her relatives, and they said, you got to get in the car and just start driving for Stephenville. This was just a week and a half ago. And she said she and her daughter are in the car, and all of a sudden here is this huge white, bright light. And she's trying to drive and look, and her daughter is saying, Mom, Mom, there's three orange lights. And these three orange lights would come on exactly. This happened so many times. the craft was going zigzagging every time these three orange lights would come on. The three orange lights would go off, and then the craft would be going absolutely straight. Then they'd see the orange lights, and it would do this zigzag. And the woman with a FEMA background and context talking to me, she said, Linda, is there anything that humans have that can go from a straight, slow pace to zigzagging and then slow pace and zigzagging and does it with orange lights? And my answer is, I don't know, but if there is anybody listening in our military or intelligence who wants to get in touch with me and give me any information off the record or on the record, I would love to hear from people who have been seeing the phenomenon, not only in Texas. I've been getting this from all over the country. And get in touch with me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And this is so important because we're here in Las Vegas because Ryan Wood and others know that we are sitting on the tip of an iceberg in which a government felt compelled to lie. A policy of denial in the interest of national security is the stated reason about not just 2008, but going back, all these people in this country who have experienced what all these people are experiencing in Texas, and the government says, you haven't seen anything, it doesn't exist, and all of a sudden we're in a nation where ridicule and sarcasm can suppress facts and truth. And that's why I do what I do. I completely disagree with such a policy of denial. And here we've got people all over who are reporting amazing encounters with lights right now.
Were you always interested in this field because you have a heavy news background, a heavy investigative news background? You know, you've been an investigator for television stations around the country.
Yeah, long time.
But at what point did this interest and this fascination with the unusual, the strangeness, as you call it, the high strangeness, when did that happen?
It was walking through that Alice in Wonderland mirror in September of 79, trying to get to the bottom of why were all those animals dying first in the state of Colorado, which is where I was director of special projects at the CBS station. And I really honestly, George, thought that I was in some kind of a Dugway proving ground story, that there was some contamination in the environment and the government was going around odd that they would leave animals dead to be found with these excisions. But right at the very beginning, I thought, I'm in a Dugway proving ground story, and I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Why is the government doing this? And it was the sheriffs. It was the deputies. It was the ranchers. All those first interviews, not with a camera, me going out just trying to find who can I talk with, right? And sitting in floors and offices and barns with people and having the sheriffs and the deputies say, Linda, we're not dealing with predator. We're not dealing with disease. We're not dealing with satanic cult. Those are deflection. That's to keep the media off our backs. We're dealing with creatures not from this planet. And when I would say, can you please tell me this on the record?
Yeah. Let me turn my camera on.
Yeah, they would look to the ground. And this is before Cruz. See, this is when I really was getting what law enforcement really, really thought.
Yeah.
And that's why I dedicated eventually my book, An Alien Harvest, to law enforcement. Because it was those people all the way back into the 50s, really, when you trace back the American story on mutilations, it goes way back before the horse in southern Colorado. Law enforcement knew that the only way that you could have a 2,000-pound bull on its back with its legs in the air, with an ear missing, eye, tongue, jaw, genitals, and rectum cord out, not have a single, no struggle line, No tracks even of the animal coming up to where it is found on its back. This is a real case. On its back, legs up in the air, all these excisions, no blood, everything is dry.
No footprints around.
Nothing. And the sheriff said, something up there, meaning
whatever,
pointing to the sky, put this animal down here in this condition.
You remember Close Encounters of the Third Kind when they were in northern Africa and you had all these tribes people there and they were chanting that five-tone thing.
That's right.
You know, na, 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 na.
That's right.
And they all pointed to the sky.
That's right.
That
it is, yeah, because law enforcement knew there's only one way. When you would find a mutilated, this happened also, a mutilated calf. This was up in the Northwest. It's up on a high ridge. It was high elevation, complete snow. And here is an animal freshly mutilated lying on top of the snow. And there's not a track. There's not a trickle of blood. And the sheriff said, whatever we're dealing with, it is picking these animals up out of pastures and it is somehow delivering them to the spot where they are found. Well, when you're exposed to that, and I come from a hard science environment background. That's been my beat from the time I was at Stanford doing work at the Stanford Linear Accelerator in the medical center. That was my whole life. I'm in the same vein. What's happening to these animals? Let's collect tissue. Let's collect soil. Let's collect plants. And as I started doing the forensics, the anomalies kept piling up, and eventually I got to work with Dr. John Altshuler, hematologist and pathologist. And I'll never forget going over to his lab on the first series of tissues and fluids that I had gotten from some mutilations and had gone into the field, collected it in formalin, and had FedExed to him. And he said, I want you to see something. He said, when I first had this tissue prepared, he said, I knew that I should be seeing something here if the hemoglobin is cooked, which is what he had established, something hot enough to cook the hemoglobin. And he said, I went to a friend of mine who's a gynecologist and uses lasers in surgery all the time. And I said, would you please give me a series of your slides before and after surgery? And
right.
He said, I want you to look. He had a stereoscopic light microscope, and we're looking on the left eye into the gynecology, and we're looking in the right eye into tissue that I had sent to him. It was very clear the carbon residue looks like little tiny grains of pepper when you look at it magnified in the laser surgery.
It's like looking at a diamond with carbon deposits, right?
We're carbon-based life form.
Yeah.
If you take humans, animals, or anything and expose it to heat, you get that black look. The mutilated animal, absolutely zero. All of the tissue that I sent him, there was no carbon residue.
Clean cuts, everything.
And he said, I'm very puzzled because we've got the hard evidence of cooked hemoglobin, but we have no evidence of a carbon residue if the instrument is a laser. These are the hard facts that I was confronting right from the beginning of my investigations that were saying to me, law enforcement's telling me it's creatures from outer space. But how do we prove this? Well, here we sit, eye to eye, having shared on the air all of these incredible firsthand testimonies for a long time by people in military and intelligence who have said to me, both off and on the record, we're dealing with extraterrestrial biological entities or time travelers or other dimensionals. An extraterrestrial today in 2008, I think, among most of my colleagues, has now expanded to include everything that is not a biological life form with a double DNA on this planet now. It's everything else.
This conference is so important because I think some top government officials, and Ryan Wood can answer this when he comes in and joins us soon, I think they're at this conference. I think
probably
they're taking notes. I think they're monitoring things that people like you and so many of the other presenters are. You know, I think they follow Dr. Roger Lear around whenever he does an alien implant extract. I do.
Well, I'll tell you. One of the things that I would like to talk with Ryan about is what does he think the chances are that with the President-elect Obama being a new administration, with John Podesta coming in from the sci-fi background on Texburg, may we know some facts?
We'll be back in a moment with Ryan Wood, ufologist and UFO investigator, who's putting on this 2008 UFO Crash Retrieval Conference. I'm George Norrie, live in the studios of KXNT in Las Vegas. Tough assignment for me, but Ian Punnett's going to hold up the fort on Saturday night. Ian, you wouldn't believe it. Linda Moulton Howe dancing to that song in the studio.
It's true.
I think I know better than that.
How you doing?
I am.
Hi, Linda. How are you
doing? Hi, Ian.
Thank God we have witnesses here.
Well, how much fun are you having in Vegas, huh?
That's a lot of work.
Well,
and you know what happens here?
Yeah.
Stays here.
Well, here, let me just tell you real quickly then, so I won't keep you from it, but coming up this weekend, three things, because I'm doing Saturday and Sunday. So there's a new book out exploring new mysteries of the Titanic. You wouldn't think that there would be anything left to talk about, but there are.
I love those stories.
I know, I do too. And there's some real interesting ones coming up in the first hour on Saturday night. And then later on, John Michael Greer, whom we all know for being sort of like the world's authority on druidism and fairies and elves, but he has this amazing book. He's a great writer, and he's written his forecast for what he thinks society might become after we run out of oil.
I love it.
It is a well-researched, it's not just some kind of, you know, dream sequence. It's a really well-articulated argument of what might happen to both the United States and then in particular communities and what we've expected from our institutions. And then on Sunday night, I can only tell you that, you know, Tracy Twyman, she puts a lot of research into what she does, and there's a new book out about an ultra-secret CIA mind control sex slave operation. And
I'm sure you'll get to the bottom of this.
It sounds crazy till you read it, and it's like why you can't be, and that all these people cannot be hallucinating. But we'll get to that, and that'll be coming up this weekend. It's about as much fun as any of us could have. Not being in Las Vegas like you and Linda.
Catch you later, Ian. Thanks for everything you do, my friend. And we'll be back in a moment with Ryan Wood and Linda Moulton Howe on Coast to Coast AM. Ryan Wood is a ufologist who holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Mathematics and Computer Science, currently managing the content of MajesticDocuments.com. Ryan has completed a documentary titled The Secret and has published two books and a CD-ROM dealing with the Majestic documents and their authenticity. A UFO investigator with MUFON, Ryan has chosen to specialize in the strategic problems of ufology, such as unquestionable proof and improve media acceptance of that proof.
And you know, George and Ryan, I just, for both of you to the Coast audience, I think that I want to say, as somebody who has been doing Coast for a long time, that www.majesticdocuments.com is absolutely one of the most important websites that there is, and that everybody listening who really would like to be exposed to what may be under the surface of our government's policy of denial, allegedly in the interest of national security, should go to MajesticDocuments.com and try, literally, to go through. How many documents are there now, Ryan?
Well, there's probably 500 pages of documents. Some top secret, some are confidential, some are just related to the topic. But I can guarantee you, you can spend several hours and not get through it all just reading the documents that are interesting and what you say are the level below. Some are compelling and stunning in that they're talk about extraterrestrials and the crash retrieval analysis done after Roswell, such as the White Hot memo and others. But then there's other sort of secondary memos that are supportive. They're bureaucratic.
And they give a context.
Yeah, they give a context, and they become very powerful because you see for the first time this huge mosaic of of evidence, and you realize, well, why would somebody do all this if it wasn't real? And
your dad has that document that is actual carbon document that we refer to as the Byrne memo that goes back, we think, to around 61 to 63 at the time when Kennedy was coming into office and was in office, and that I've gone into that in Earth Files and Coast to Coast in the past, but it is an example of the kind of document. This is not a Xerox.
No, no. This is an original onion skin document with magenta ink typed on it that you can do mass spectroscopy and liquid chromatography on. You can look at the watermarks and compare them with other government watermarks. You can look at the typefaces. You can do the classic FBI forensic work on the document, let alone the content and what it says about it.
And we know it goes back to the early 60s. We know it says that it's from MJ1, who was identified as director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Right. We know that it is supposed to be directed to MJ2 through MJ7. And the bottom line, as your dad has articulated, that it not only is going into changes that the director of the CIA wants to make about how essentially to handle UFO matters in relationship to the executive branch, with some very, very serious implications that may have set up what led, perhaps, to Kennedy's assassination. But there is a paragraph in there that basically your dad interprets that there can be executive orders classified, that a president could issue an order that it is classified and no one will know, not Congress, not the American public, and certainly not the media, and that goes right to the heart of my own research the last 5 years with Andrew Kistner in New Mexico, who had all those leaks from White Sands and from the Naval Research Lab about Truman putting together a classified executive order that set in motion the policy of denial in the interest of national security that no one was to know except MJ-12 and those with the classified need to know.
Right.
Sitting here today, we have just gone into a whole new administration which, in its own way, might be slightly revolutionary for the United States in terms of change.
It's been a long time.
It's been a very long time up to this point. Do you think, sitting here tonight, that there's any chance with John Podesta having knowledge about Kexburg and working with Sci-Fi and now being part of this new administration?
Former Clinton aide.
That we might get some more truth?
Well, I'm hopeful that we will get more truth. The question is, when will they? It's a very complicated problem. And it's got multiple layers of secrecy and issues. And until they fix the sort of primary things that they've been hired, in essence, by the American people to solve, the economy, et cetera, they're not going to get to it. I suspect that they're going to get to it maybe if they execute on the important stuff that fixes things, they'll get to it in a year or two.
Or more.
Maybe the second term or something. Yeah. But that's the...
Well, they got to fix the economy if there's going to be a second term.
That's absolutely right.
What would motivate, what would be the leverage point after 60 years of solid lies, allegedly patriotic lies, but lies nevertheless?
Yeah.
They know, we know, that we are dealing with something that is put in their own category as non-human. They call them non-human entities, NHEs, or extraterrestrial biological entities, EBEs, but there are all these acronyms. This is our own government in documents that have been leaked or people who have seen them.
There's got to be a real motivation for the government to do this. And the only motivation that I can see that's clear is we want the energy technology. I mean, that may be the most dangerous thing for them to tackle or deal with. You know, we all know that flying saucers don't use conventional stuff.
Yeah,
they're not burning coal
or gasoline
or Jet A or something.
They probably drink it. They live it. Yeah.
So that's the key challenge is to how do you let that anti-gravity out at the same time control it and not allow Osama bin Laden to show up on Venice Beach with a tactical nuke or something.
And who's going to make money off of it?
Well, that's the other thing. And this is something that you experienced with researching the bismuth magnesium piece. That it's, here's an alleged piece of a crash saucer, and it's very novel and unique, and all the physicists and metallurgists say that, yeah, this is weird. I can't make this. I can patent it, but I can't manufacture it. I don't know what it's good for.
That's right.
And so I can't make money off of it. And it's, in essence, a glorified paperweight on the table awaiting breakthroughs in our science and understanding as to how to leverage and capture that value and economic value. And that's the same problem that's faced with the power plant. Is it levitates, but how do you make more of them? Or how do you understand the nature of what's going on? And so that's the area where I would think that might be a driving motivation for them to consider it. But there may be something far more safe that's been going on in the past, things like alleged claims of reverse engineering associated with the fiber optics or night vision goggles, or there may be other simple things that are obvious mm-hmm. to extract and feed into the economy that aren't so
dramatic
and unknown response. That's the critical thing, is you don't understand how society will react. If you were to tell them there's ETs here, most people would say, okay, fine. If you say, what's the proof? Well, Roswell was real. Okay.
And animal mutilations are linked, and then it becomes very dangerous.
And then they begin to panic, too, Linda.
Well,
tell them that they're mutilating animals, all of a sudden a human goes, oh, my God, why?
But if you can say it's because they have a survival problem that is linked to the survival of our planet, then most humans, I think, can extend out, oh, well, we kill them every day, but we need some kind of a trade agreement here then. Because the ranchers need to be in on the deal, not left out in the dark.
I agree, but what if we as humans are being abducted and mutilated the same way because they need us? Then you have panic.
We don't have any hard evidence of human mutilations. I would say after 28 years, humans are treated highly differently than
humans. But don't we have
humans.
People disappearing, just
yes.
merely disappearing?
Yeah.
But I don't think you come at this problem from that standpoint of those ifs. I think that it is more, we're not alone in this universe. There are other things that have been coming and going and interacting with this planet far longer than a century. That goes back to Sumeria and before. And it's time that whatever we are in relationship to it, that we can stand and face it, that it becomes, you're not our keepers. You're not our gods. You're another life form. And let's get this back on a more even keel so we know where we stand if there's conflict or what's going on out there. And one of the things I'm curious, Ryan, you started the conference with the idea of like a 10-year plan of 10-year conference.
Well, this is number six.
This is
right?
number six, yeah.
And how close do you think you are in your 10-year plan to the government living up to its unstated side of the bargain and coming clean, and we all being able to come to the 10th conference with, and we're not alone in the universe, this is who they are, and this is why they're here.
Maybe they can join us at that conference,
well,
whoever
that would
be they may be.
That's right. Well, my opinion is that we're going to have to drag the evidence out of the system, kicking and screaming all the way. And that by witness, I think there's a lot of evidence inside the National Archives. You know, the bad guys don't know where it is because we have football fields worth of documents, and I don't know where it is, but I've got strategies to figure out where it is and techniques. And the first person to the cache of thousands of pages of documents that are right out of the National Archives, because the National Archivist, the head archivist has said, if it says magic on it, top secret magic, and doesn't say Air Force or DOD or anything else, I'll declassify it right on the spot. If it says Interplanetary Phenomenon Unit, I'll declassify it, provided it's not somebody else's equity, so to speak. If he has no rules associated with these code words and no guidelines, and so he treats it like, if it doesn't say anything about technology in it, just talks about extraterrestrials, things like that, he will declassify it. And so I'm confident that you could get a powerful cluster of documents out of the archives if you could find them. I know they're in there because they're sort of spread to the wind.
And they're in Suitland underground that's inaccessible to all of us.
Well, I think those are also in College Park, Maryland, but in some of the vaults there, the classified vaults.
But do you know of any precedent where there has been a classified executive order by a president of the United States that then is rescinded and made public? AEC, anything?
No, I'm
nothing
not aware of it.
Sealed, anything like that?
There's been stuff that's been declassified,
after 50 years.
Or something that's not relevant to technology or secrets at the time or personnel. They declassify top secret stuff all the time. But as far as an executive order signed by the president,
that's right.
No. I mean, I think even the acknowledgement of a classified executive order is still off the table. Nobody has officially acknowledged that such a law and such an order could exist.
Except the leakers have.
Except the leakers, right.
They definitely have. And just thinking that we are 2012, this kind of strange next marker in the timeline that everybody is kind of nervous about, like they were with Y2K. What do you think, is there any mechanism that anybody in Congress could do as a leverage point to go after an executive order if they had enough evidence that one existed from 1947 signed by Harry S. Truman? Could a 2008 going forward Congress demand to have that out in their hands and then declare it open? Is there any mechanism for doing
that? Well, the only thing that I can think of that, short of an intricate behind-the-scenes secrecy, talking to more secrecy thing, is to just have Congress declare that all secrecy oaths associated with extraterrestrials are null and void. And that you are free to talk about anything to anybody for any reason, and we prefer that you write your congressman a detailed 10-page memo about your personal involvement.
It's going to take a congressional hero, though, Ryan, to do that.
Oh, yeah.
You know that? Because, like you said, with the economy, the Iraq war, and everything, they will put the UFO situation on the back burner. Only because they will think that the public will think that their priorities are all screwed up.
Absolutely correct, George.
So it's deep six for another 100 years.
You know, this economy, I've been told by a number of experts, could take years to get us back to where we were. So that's a problem that is obviously going to be on Obama's list, number one issue in the campaign. Ironically, Iraq, which was the top issue 4 years ago, was way down on the bottom this year. But if you threw in, as we've talked to Stephen Bassett about, this very important subject of disclosure, if you tried to get Congress today to push for that and put some efforts into it, legitimate efforts, with everything that's going on in this planet, they'd laugh at us. And what we're going to need, Ryan and Linda, is someone to leak something that is so intense that they can't deny it.
Or that the non-human phenomena acts finally in some huge public global way that is indisputable to all nations.
And not a false flag, not some psychic who thinks they're coming down on a certain day. It's got to be something dramatic, almost like Independence Day, the movie, but in a safer way.
Right.
Now, what do you think in four more years we might be talking about at this conference?
Well, I think we have many more UFO crash retrieval events to discuss. I mean, there's 74 in my book, Magic Eyes Only, and MAJIC, and there's another 25 on my desk. And if I keep digging in other foreign countries, that I speak English, but I don't speak Chinese or, you know, all the other languages in the countries, there's many more, and they all need to be advanced. So I think we could be continue to talk about pulling out physical evidence. That's really my focus, is I want a hatch cover. I want something clearly extraterrestrial that will take on a strong scientific evidence and catch a news cycle in a very positive and credible way, something that could be on CNN for 3 or 4 days or catch a significant buzz. And that's my goal, really.
And if there have been that many crashes and retrievals, isn't the implication that maybe all of the stories from Andrew Kistner and from Len Stringfield, that we had a standing order in the American military from the 40s to the mid-1950s to shoot down disc craft, And as Lynn Stringfield said, we lost so many pilots trying to carry that out. We finally rescinded it.
Absolutely. Ryan, good luck with this conference. Well put on and very necessary. I'll be back with Linda Moulton Howe as we chat with John Alexander. He's an expert in the development of non-lethal weaponry. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. What's a person who's an expert in non-lethal weaponry doing at a UFO crash retrieval conference? In a moment, find out as John Alexander joins Linda Moulton Howe and me next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference here in Las Vegas. Dr. John Alexander is a leading advocate for the development of non-lethal weaponry. Well, what's he doing at a UFO conference?
It's a very good question because I met this man sitting next to me here in this studio years ago at UFO conferences. And, you know, John, when we first met, it was in the context of General Stubblebine and remote viewing and what you had done with Army intelligence. And it seems to me that if I boil down everything that I remember from that period of time, it was that remote viewing had, at least through Ingo Swann and others, provoked enough information about the possibility of disks, UFOs, non-human life forms here, and that this was being done under Pentagon, I guess you would say, context.
Well, I'd agree with about 90% of that.
Well, talk about
all except the part that
sounds like a military man.
Yeah,
90%.
The part I wouldn't agree with has to do with the Pentagon interest. As you know, I'm giving a talk there, and I have to say there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is the government's been telling you the truth. The bad news is the government's telling you the truth. They simply don't care. And contrary to reality, I mean, it sounded to me from the last half hour that ET has a quality control problem. We've got these advanced technologies going a gazillion miles and falling down all over the world, and very tough. No, I have spent a lot of time.
That is a good observation, though.
Are you saying that you have hard proof that there are not crashed disks, triangles, cylinders on this planet that have been retrieved?
Yeah, I would. You can't prove a negative. I would say the evidence supporting it is much slimmer than most of your audience would believe. I'm going to talk to a lot of this at the conference and some of the things they were saying. We were off air. We were discussing. Well, I call it the presidential paradox.
And that is?
We have just come through a very, very nasty election. It was very, very close, all negative. We've had two such elections in the past that have been, you know, squeaky close. Remember Bush 2000 and how close that went. It's my position that if they, whoever they are, had access to the information, and these are people who you purport control technologies and all that.
The MJ-12 type.
Yeah. At some point, they would have used it. I mean, and you only got to swing the vote. We're not talking about moving 40% of the voters. We're talking 2 or 3% makes, you know, would have changed the outcome in at least three presidential elections.
But
I believe,
John,
it would have been used.
John, that is a schizophrenic argument because if there is a policy of denial in the interest of national security, then no sitting group, no matter who they are and what they are in 2008, is going to use the very material that is defined as a threat to national security.
Well, I don't know who defines it as a threat to national security.
Truman.
Who?
Harry S. Truman is the story.
Well, I don't believe anybody believes that. I happen to think they should. I think there are, you know, this is where it is. You have some very strong evidence that says we've had major interactions with some unknown craft that have, you know, interrupted our strategic systems.
From some very prominent people, too. Yeah.
And Malmstrom Air Force Base being one of the major ones.
Yeah. And the point is that they look at, this is the most disconcerting thing to me, is they go out and they look at it, say, haven't been able to figure this out, and go, what the hell, we'll move on. I think the discussion that you had about where the world is today is very germane. See, I argue that, you know, in fact, most of the people in the U.S. believe in UFOs. However, believing in UFOs and thinking this is important is a very, very different thing. And I think that you will find that, you know, you have a small subset who attend conferences like this who feel very passionately about that. And they also think that, by the way, this is a voting issue. And there was discussion about what do you do with Congress. The answer is absolutely nothing. I mean, they will laugh. And I'm going to talk about the potential. We had a few years ago the potential to have congressional hearings. And it got shot down because of, you know, when the Disclosure Project went out and started beating the drums and all that, and everybody headed for the hills. I will tell you, the congressman who was involved, because I wrote the draft of a charter that was going to be used in this, and I looked him in the eye and said, can you take a 20-point hit? And he happened to have said yes. And that's not an arbitrary figure, but this is... It is not a good thing. I don't know if you're reading the news tonight.
Let him finish.
Tonight, you'll notice that Obama is apologizing to Nancy Reagan for a comment
on seances.
So the point is, from a public perspective, a political perspective, this is not a good thing.
Exactly.
Well,
it's way too early in the ball game to start offending people.
What you meant was it would be a 20-point drop if a congressman tried to lead out and say, we want to get to the bottom of the UFO story.
Especially nowadays with the priorities, Iraq and the economy and things like that.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, as you know, I put out a thing before the election because I wanted to be kind of on the record. And my position was, if they exist, whoever they are, and like you said, maybe an MJ-12, maybe government, maybe quasi-government, maybe an industry. If they had that technology and had perfected it, and the rumors are out there, we've seen these things flying around. In my view, it would have been released before the election, the intent in swinging the election, because I am sure they would have strongly supported McCain. We do know from CEOs of major corporations that they were very strongly in favor of McCain over Obama. As the thing closed, they would have done it. Why? For two reasons. Our economy is at best unstable and potentially chaotic. And if you look at what happened, by the way, after the election and what's happened to the stock market, today it bounced up a little bit, but it was a big hit this week. Yeah, record hits, and certainly record hits following an election. If they own this technology, and it is about energy. It's not about zipping around neat little, you know, craft and things. Then you've got to have a mechanism by which the wealth is transferred to you. And you can't have that if your economic system is in chaos. So there would have been strong impetus to make sure that the system remains as strong as possible. And you didn't see it.
How do you react, though, John, to like a U.S. pilot, military pilot, who says while in England, in the United Kingdom, they have files there, 50 years ago, he was ordered to let all his weaponry go on a UFO that he said showed up on radar, was huge, and took off at what he estimated to be 10,000 miles an hour, which in those days, we didn't have anything like that.
Right.
What do you say about that?
I say we have had a number of such interactions, not usually violent ones, but ones in which, you know, there's definitely interaction between us and them, whoever them are. And we haven't done anything. This is why I'm saying that's the bad news, is that these incidents occur. They occur with some degree of regularity, and they're just putting the too tough to handle bin.
Well, maybe so. So you would agree that whatever's going on, it's pretty darn strange.
Well, yeah. And when we did, like I said, when I drafted the charter for potential congressional hearings, it did not happen. There were two particular issues. One was national defense, and the other one was air safety, because you have had a series of interactions that have impacted the potential for air safety.
Right.
And I say the bad news is they ignore it. And a lot of it, I'll go back to Condon, because I think most people fail to understand the impact that the Condon report had. For a strange reason, he was right, by the way. The question to Condon was not, are there UFOs? It was, are UFOs a threat? and his response was no threat.
Well, then that was misinterpreted by the media to make it seem like it was a negative report debunking the existence of UFOs.
But the problem, but the damage that he did cannot be underestimated, because not only did he say it's not that, he said also, and you will not study this, you know, that he made it so all scientists, you know, you risk your career, and I can show you some scars if you're out there and you talk about these things in the conventional media. It's getting better, but over time.
But Stanton Friedman would argue, if he were sitting here, that Condon was under some order to come to a conclusion that would take the heat off of the Air Force back, and that they would come out with a policy that the University of Colorado physicists said there's nothing to this.
Air Force got exactly what they wanted. An action passed is an action handled.
Right.
We do. You know, I got asked today. In fact, I saw a T-shirt that said "Doing the Air Force's job since 1949." You know, no. The point is, they are the Air Force. They come under the Department of Defense. You know, if there's no threat, Department of Defense doesn't get involved.
And so, the people who have had all the secrets have been AEC and the Navy right from the beginning.
Have been what?
The Atomic Energy Commission and the Navy is where most of the extraterrestrial knowledge craft, that's where it went. The Air Force, in some ways, was almost itself used as a deflection.
Air Force is responsible for air and space, and they were the ones responsible. And what they did not want to do, remember how the government works, and one of my major arguments, I'm going to discuss this as well, is people don't understand how the government works, okay, and how these macro systems work, why they do what they do. Now, this is national defense. They have one-to-end priority list. You got a limited amount of money, and you run out of money long before you get to N. And so anything you can move to move, you know, things that are very important to you, they get funded. Things like this
a
nuisance.
What about the black ops program, so, John? And we know they exist.
That's pretty broad.
There could be a budget of $1 publicly, but $5 below the line.
Are there, programs that you don't see? Absolutely. But, and I think this is one of the misperceptions. There's a huge misperception, and I heard, you know, our favorite Canadian former Minister of Defense get in and say, oh, there's $1 trillion missing and nobody knows where it goes. Absolutely not true. Even within what you call black budgets, there is A, oversight, and B, fierce fighting, because they too have one-to-end priorities and have run out of money long before they got out of neat ideas of things they want to do.
Rumsfeld himself, right before 9/11, was on television talking about the huge, gigantic amount of money that they could not account for in the Pentagon.
Yeah, but understand what he was doing. I mean, A, that was a political ploy. B, it's not that there isn't some money that has not been accounted for. But he was, again, it was before 9/11, which is critical, because this was before the global war on terror and that, and what he was trying to do was to make major changes in the way the Pentagon does business. And I think he vastly, because I heard the statement too, but vastly overstated it for his own political purposes.
Well, let's pin you down for a second here, Dr. Alexander. These incredible things that so many people report, average citizens, former astronauts, dedicated people, what do you think is going on? What's your gut tell you? Now, I know you say whoever they may be, but what do you think?
Yeah, you're right. Pin me down. We haven't got enough time for that. It was something I mentioned tonight at the thing. As you know, UFOs are not the only phenomena that I'm interested in. Looking at a wide range of things, you know, I'm involved with remote viewing and the IRVA organization. I did a lot of work in psychokinesis. I've just spent a couple of weeks in the Peruvian Amazon with shamans down there. Whatever it is, it's terribly complex.
So you admitted something.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. That's a big step.
The physical. And this is one of the things I usually start with a position. Here's my position. Absolutely real. In physical reality, as we know it, at least at some points. Because I do think that there are things that transit our temporal domain, you know, as we know it. And I suspect they go someplace else. And, you know, but how you put all this together, I don't know. But the problem is it's terribly complex. And it does look like consciousness is a key component.
True.
And had you ever seen anything when you were in Army Intel that was either a photograph of an actual aerial machine classified or a body? What about in remote viewing? Did you have anything like Ingo Swann has talked about?
Well, I'm familiar with Ingo, and they did some playing around with, kind of a test.
Well, he found a disc behind a submarine.
I know, but did I ever say anything? What I can tell you is because I was in a position to see highly classified reports and what was in the open domain, I would tell you that 98% of the information was already in the public domain. The main things that were missing was what we call sources and methods. In other words, how did you get it? How good were the satellites and those sorts of things? But getting back to something you said earlier, George, not only do we have witnesses, but basically every sensor system we have has picked up anomalies.
Right.
I mean, so
that's an incredible story,
and it's across the board.
And if it is extraterrestrial biological entity, a phrase that's been in our own documents of government, at least those that have been leaked as being real, then it means at some point in the last 60 years, somebody serving in government used those three words, extraterrestrial biological entity, to categorize something.
But Linda, let's remember, you say the number of people that would have transcended the government in the time frame you're talking about are in tens of millions. There's no doubt. I don't think there's any set of words that exist that haven't been, put into documents someplace on any topic.
I'm referring to the Psalm 101, the document on retrieval.
I don't believe that. Yeah, I'm going to talk about, in fact, I think one of the things.
Well, you're the only one then who is outside of that.
Yeah. I'm going to talk to that because, A, the government has secrets. We know that. The secrets have come out. And I argue that a good thing to look at is look what happened in Watergate versus MJ-12. And look at how that information was gotten. I think there's a hard correlation, and Majestic does not stand up.
What do you mean? Some sort of a corollary between Watergate and MJ-12? What do you mean?
You had a deep, dark secret that they wanted out. The source in Watergate was known. They went to the Washington Post, a respected entity that had massive resources behind it, that had the ability to research it. They gave it to young but good reporters. They vetted the source and all that. The other one, we got mysterious documents that show up in somebody's mailbox and hope that somebody will pick it up to people who are not in the system, who have no resources. Now, if you want the information out, there are ways to do it, and we have seen them. And I think those, the parallels are just dramatic.
Are you excluding Kenneth Arnold's eyewitness sighting? Are you excluding all of the people in 1947 who were talking photographing?
No, he's not. I don't think he's excluding what they're seeing or what they're doing.
No, not at all. No, the reports are absolutely there. The part I have is there's a big conspiracy. I have talked to the senior levels of, kind of across the board, didn't have it.
Looking forward to your speech at the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference, John Alexander. We'll be back in a moment with Nick Pope, former official of the United Kingdom's Ministry of Defense. We'll be back. At the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference with Linda Moulton Howe, and I was watching here at the KXNT studios, Dr. Roger Lear was wandering by, and so Tommy grabbed him and brought him in for a second. Roger, what are you doing here?
Well, George, you should know by now that I'm always interested in anything, especially that which is so interesting and important in the field of ufology, and especially that which has to do with physical evidence.
Truly dedicated. your profession, my friend. And I've been hearing some scuttlebutt around this conference that you have done a television pilot.
Yes, we have, and we expect it to air perhaps during Sweeps Week, which is usually this month. It's going to be a very, very interesting show because it involves the 15th in our series of surgeries that we have performed for the removal of objects which appear to be non-terrestrial implants in humans.
As soon as you get a date, you'll let us know and I can pass it on.
I certainly will, George.
That's Dr. Roger Lear, back in a moment. Well, it's good to see Nick Pope up front. Nick Pope, an official for the UK's Ministry of Defense from 1985 to 2006. He was also the desk officer responsible for investigating officially documented UFO sightings and to determine whether they involved any potential threat to the UK. Nick and his colleagues became privately convinced that there was an important defense, national security, and flight safety issues involved here with unexplained phenomenon.
And you know, Nick, we've all been hearing about this really important historic case in which a pilot is saying he was ordered to try to shoot down with everything he had a disc. And I'm curious, in the context of what I've been exposed to for about a decade from both a New Mexico representative who had leaks from people in the Naval Research Lab in White Sands, that he is also getting that we had standing orders in the United States from the Truman administration till around 1953 or 54. And that he told me, Len Stringfield told me before Len died, that we lost so many American pilots and so many planes trying to carry out an order to attack the disks for what reason? We wanted the technology. Is there anything that has come out of your work and any of these documents that you've seen that maybe some of us haven't that would suggest that the United States and England were both working on a policy to bring down disks?
I mean, rules of engagement is always a very, very difficult area to discuss. And rules of engagement, the general position is that even if you know the details, you can't discuss that. I mean, I was surprised to see this case in the files. But I'll make a qualification because I think this is quite an important one. We're talking, you raised the question of the pilot Milton Torres and his testimony that in 1957, although there was actually some confusion about the date, and there's maybe suggestion that it's 56, he claims that in response to uncorrelated targets being tracked on the radar, he was vectored towards this UFO and given the shoot-down order. He then claims that he was about to carry out that shoot-down order when the UFO just accelerated away at such an impossible speed. He simply wasn't able to take that action. The important qualification in this particular incident is to say that the document that people have taken this story from in the Ministry of Defense case file, in the second batch of files that were released on October 20th, it is a genuine document. It genuinely does come from the Ministry of Defense files, and you can find it on the National Archives website. However, it's not a Ministry of Defense or a United States Air Force witness statement. What it is, if you go to the next document, or rather the preceding document, you'll see there's a cover letter actually from a UFO researcher saying this is a transcript of a write-up that Milton Torres did. So now, of course, many of you will have seen Milton Torres in the media discussing mm-hmm. this in the first person, sure. So I'm not in any way trying to disparage the individual, who's obviously a brave and honorable man, nor am I trying to disparage the story, but I am simply saying that in terms of following the paper trail, it is important to realize that we have not got, and a lot of UFO researchers think we've not got an official USAF report, and that, of course, is one of the interesting things. Where is that report? But you're right. I mean, speaking more generally, of course, and again, I'm not going to discuss rules of engagement, but I mean, whether there's a standing shoot-down order is one question. We certainly know, and many people will be familiar with other incidents, and I'm thinking particularly of Parviz Jafari, Iran, 1976, Comandante, Comandante Huertes from Peru in 1980. Those were certainly shoot-down situations. In Parviz Jafari's case, of course, he wasn't able to fire his weapon system because that was the one part of the system that didn't work. Whether that was caused by the UFO or not, we don't know. Comandante Huertes in Peru in 1980, of course, did fire his machine cannon, and he testifies, and this is on the record, that the rounds struck the craft, whatever it was, and the fighter controller had given a shoot-down order because this was unauthorized aerial activity in a restricted military area. He said that these rounds were, in his words, absorbed by the craft.
And we've heard that before. And, Nick, if I'm hearing what you're saying, to you, who worked inside of the British government, you're saying it's almost more interesting to you the fact that Torres is willing to talk his own firsthand experience, but that you cannot find an official government document.
Yes. Now, that doesn't necessarily...
Yeah, that's not unusual.
It's not unusual, but on the other hand, neither does it mean there's a conspiracy or a cover-up. I mean, I was 21 years in government, not just on the UFO job, but in security and finance. I was a briefer, and I'm afraid to admit, but I think anyone who's been in government will admit this, I have lost documents before. I've probably...
In those crummy little metal file cabinets they forced us to use.
I've mainly because I've misfiled things. But now in the electronic age, of course, there's a different set of problems to do with, all sorts of electronic filing issues. But we don't have the original report from Milton Torres, and I think it's a very important question. Where is it?
And you know the MJ-12, Majestic documents, all of the stuff that Ryan and Bob have gotten and others. So we have this huge, we'll call it a pool of alleged government documents in the United States that fall under the MJ-12 magic, sort of, if you want to call it, as a genre in the United States. Is there anything in the UK that comes close to being like the Majestic 12 documents that have been leaked, released, or discussed here?
No. There are certainly a number of fairly highly classified documents. For example, ones from the Defence Intelligence Staff, which is part of the Ministry of Defence, and they're people that I was not part of the Defence Intelligence Staff myself, but I worked alongside them on the UFO issue. There are certainly a number of Defence Intelligence Staff documents which have been released under the Freedom of Information Act, which talk about UFOs, sometimes in quite interesting and speculative terms, the exotic possibilities. We tried never to use words like alien or extraterrestrial. What there isn't in these files is a smoking gun that says, yes, we have something, or we know something for sure. There's an awful lot of material, often at levels of classification up to and including secret UK eyes only, which is almost as high as it gets before you get top secret, that, you know, says there is something in our airspace and we don't know what it is, and it might be something exotic, but there's nothing that says we know for a fact it's extraterrestrial and we've got some hardware.
Do you think it would make any political sense, historic sense, that the United States government would have kept secrets about extraterrestrial biological entities and their technology from our longtime mother and ally, England?
Oh, absolutely. And absolutely. My position on this would be, yes, Britain and America are very, very close allies. But actually, for the very reasons that I think I heard earlier in the show you articulating, certainly I think I've heard you and others say this before, this might be the one secret that if America did have it, and I don't know whether you do or don't, I would be tempted to keep it to myself. I mean, after all, the country on Earth that first acquires extraterrestrial technology, if it's there to be acquired, is going to be the dominant force on this planet for the next 10,000 years. Those are high stakes. True. To keep it to yourself. And let me tell you something. As someone with 21 years' experience in the MOD, I can tell you, if we, the British, had this, we would not, I don't think,
share it with the Americans.
Why should we? We would want that technology for ourselves, for military reasons, for political reasons, for industrial and financial reasons.
So we'd be singing
Rule
Britannica here.
Absolutely
again.
Right. We want our empire back.
Well, knew it.
This comes then right to the heart of a subject I'm going to be talking about tomorrow at the conference, i.e. the Bentwaters-Rendlesham Forest story, of which there are so many facets because apparently there were so many people involved. And in the work that I have done with James Peniston and John Burroughs, and some of that has, tomorrow will be the first time that it will have ever been exposed to the public, what I'm going to present. It has convinced me that something so extraordinary occurred from December 26th to December 28th, 1980, that it even had Lieutenant Colonel Charles Hault on the tape recording that was being recorded by the command post at their agreement, saying, "The lights are speaking to us. We are dealing with something that is drawing us." There were all of these verbs at various points on the audio tape as if Colonel Hault himself was getting some kind of, if not telepathic, certainly some kind of an impression from whatever these lights were. Is it possible that the very nature of the high-ranking number of military people who were there in those three nights and had experiences that the UK and the American government said, this can't, we can't let this out. We're going to mix dates. We're going to mix names. We're going to misinform this because we don't know what happened.
I would categorize it. I would come to a slightly different conclusion. I would say that there was a catastrophic failure of information sharing between the British and American on this. And I just want to go back, actually, to the point about the special relationship between Britain and America, because I think this is very important. One has to remember, and even Roswell has maybe a role in all of this, one has to remember the timing. In the late 40s and the early 50s in particular, there was actually a catastrophic breakdown of the special relationship between Britain and America, precisely because of a number of high-profile spy scandals. And actually, there were many people, for example, in the CIA, and James Jesus Angleton was mentioned earlier today, which I was very interested to hear, and there were a number of people in the American intelligence community who wanted to completely stop the flow of any intelligence or certainly sensitive intelligence from America to Britain, because they believed that Britain had been fundamentally penetrated at a number of levels by Soviet intelligence. And indeed, in some respects, they were right. We all know the names of people like Burgess and McLean and Blunt and Philby. And this, I think, might explain why, if Roswell was real and if some of these other things happened, why the Americans didn't perhaps decide to share that with their greatest ally.
And Paul Hellyer last year told me that the thing
former
that astounded
Canadian
him.
Former Defense Minister.
Yes, Ministry of Defense. He said that the thing that stunned him was to realize that here he is, he's been out of government, he's retired. He knows a man who is an American general in the U.S. Air Force, also retiring, who tells him UFOs are real, everything in Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso's book is absolutely accurate. In fact, does not include everything that is out there. And Paul Hellyer said, "Linda, I was stunned because I never, ever in my entire career in the Canadian government as Minister of Defense, I never saw a single document coming from the United States government about UFO activity. And yet, looking back historically, the time that he was Minister of Defense, when Pierre Trudeau was the Prime Minister, there was huge flaps of UFO activity in the United States."
Yes, and it would be inconceivable that someone somewhere wouldn't be looking at that. I mean, again, with my background in the Ministry of Defense, whatever you believe about UFOs, if there's something flying in your airspace, particularly if it's seen by military pilots and tracked on radar, it is undeniably a defense of national security issue.
And someone
will be taking a look at it. So yeah.
Is that how this happened? Why you were assigned to this area? Did something specifically happen and they said, we've got to have somebody monitor this?
Oh, no. I mean, Britain has been looking at the UFO issue since 1950.
So it must be serious to them.
It's something, well, you know, we probably the reason our UFO project survived and Project Blue Book didn't is probably because we were smaller and therefore cheaper. So we didn't, I mean, we didn't come under any kind of scrutiny in terms of why are you wasting time and money on this. So it was a small unit and it was able to continue its work kind of out of the public eye. And that work continues to this day. And, of course, what we're seeing now in the media, and it's been on, I'm pleased to see it not just in the British media but in the American media on some fairly mainstream news shows. The British government in December 2007 made this commitment to release the UFO files. And of course, the reason why it's a 3 to 4 year process is because, as I just mentioned, we have been doing this since the 50s. There have been over 11,000 UFO sightings that we've got documentation on. And of course, the files contain more than just that. There's correspondence files, policy files, files detailing how this subject is handled when it's raised in the media or by members of parliament. So there's a lot of material.
And your point about exclusion of information between the United States and England was the point that Paul Hellyer was making. It meant that the United States wasn't communicating anything to England during Pierre Trudeau's administration.
Yeah, to the best. I mean, you see, I've been often accused either of being part of the cover-up or a disinformation campaign myself, or of being out of the loop and just not having access to the really sensitive information. I don't believe either of them. Well, I know the first one isn't true. I can't prove the second one isn't true. How can you prove a negative? That old chestnut. But I honestly think that the position is, the reason I haven't seen those sort of smoking gun documents in any British files is because we don't have them.
And if they don't have them in Canada, didn't have them, and the United States has been sitting on all of this, then it's possible, George, that this does go back to what Bob Wood suspects and what Andy Kissner said. He was told that Harry S. Truman signed a classified executive order to keep all things related to what they called extraterrestrial biological entities, to keep it completely under wraps in the interest of national security.
Something scared them, or as Nick says, they didn't want to share supposed technology.
And there is that majestic white-hot document and the Interplanetary Phenomenon Unit that says that we found bodies dissected as one would a frog at Landing Zone 1 between Corona and Roswell, and that at Landing Zone 2, bodies were outside of a craft. Neither one were disc-shaped. They were wedge-shaped. And inside of the craft at Landing Zone 2, which is the Trinity site at White Sands, they allegedly found animal parts inside of that craft, or at least that's what the document suggests. And that goes right to the heart of how long has something from some place that we can't define been using livestock of this planet for reasons unknown.
Well, Nick, I want to tell you as we wrap this up that your credibility in this field and your expertise truly enhances not only conferences like this, but this entire field of people who have really, like Roger Lear and Stanton Friedman and Stephen Bassett and Richard Dolan, people who have devoted their lives to this, your credibility really makes that worth it for them.
Thank you very much. And it's good to be in the studio, by the way, and not down the line from England at 4 in the morning.
Absolutely. And you're in Las Vegas.
Absolutely.
So it's enjoy,
great
too.
Great fun.
We'll be back in just a moment with Linda Moulton Howe and more guests. I'm George Norrie, and we're live at the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference in Las Vegas. Well, the presidential election has come and gone, and now Stephen Bassett joins us again as we talk about his campaign for disclosure. Up next is Stephen Bassett with Linda Moulton Howe and I on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen Bassett, a leading advocate for ending the government-imposed truth embargo regarding extraterrestrial presence and the human race. He's a political activist, lobbyist, commentator. Stephen, also the founder of the Paradigm Research Group, executive director of the Extraterrestrial Phenomena Political Action Committee, also the executive director of the X Conference, and of course, you know him as a regular guest on Coast to Coast AM.
Steve, what I thought about almost immediately upon the election of President-elect Obama was, as the next 24 hours, we heard that John Podesta was going to be working in his administration. That the last time that you and I talked about John Podesta, it was in the context of the Sci-Fi Channel looking at Kexburg, making some sort of legal appeal. As we're talking in November of 2008, what has happened to the legal action that started through Sci-Fi? And if John Podesta was at the heart of that, is it possible that he might do a briefing himself for President Obama?
First of all, I don't know the status of the legal action, but there is the larger picture here is quite profound. The Sci-Fi Channel set up the Coalition for Freedom of Information. We don't know whether the Sci-Fi Channel just decided to do it and called up John Podesta and said, why don't you come on board with this, or whether they were approached to do it with the idea that if somebody in government wanted this. The point is that John Podesta appended himself to that initiative, Coalition for Freedom of Information. He spoke at the National Press Club twice, calling for the releasing of all UFO documents, the truth to the American people, saying the people can handle this. If you go to YouTube, you can put John Podesta in there, you'll get these videos. They're right there. He did it in October of 2002, 2003. He was also in some documentary videos talking about this. He was fully outed on this issue. And, of course, he's tied to the issue through the fact that he was the chief aide to Clinton during the Rockefeller Initiative, when Rockefeller was trying to get Clinton to be the disclosure president, issue amnesty to witnesses and everything else. He knows everything that's going on this issue in terms of the politics going back to 92. And one of the reasons that people may know that is we've made a great deal of effort to tell them. I mean, we've got websites about it. It's up on the Internet. I've been talking about it on radio for almost 5 years. John Podesta is in this issue big time. Richardson, Bill Richardson, former Secretary of Energy, came out on the issue in 2004. I believe the Democrats had something planned for 2005, but they lost the election. They went quiet on the issue, and now they're back. In that 4 years, the connection between John Podesta and the UFO ET issue has only grown. And in spite of all of that, he is selected as the head of the transition team, and according to one New York Times article, is writing a sample inaugural address. This is not an accident. None of this is an accident. I believe the Democrats have been planning to do disclosure under a Democrat administration for a while. It's being discussed and dealt with at the intellectual behind-the-scenes level, right, at the level of a Podesta. The Center for American Progress is the perfect center point here. I believe John Podesta will likely be a key figure in the disclosure process. He will be the interface between the new president and the internal management structures.
But, Steve, couldn't it be that Podesta only knows a little bit about Kexburg and knows that the government is sitting on a gigantic iceberg of which UFOs and the phenomena and all of these leaked documents having to do with non-humans are out there? The Clintons knew it. A lot of people knew it. Everybody who's worked in government hears these rumors. He may not have any detailed knowledge. He may not have the goods, so to speak.
He doesn't have to have the goods. And any individual case is really not important now. We're way past that now. What I suspect, almost near certainty, is that Podesta is informed one way or another by inside. Remember, he was the chief of staff to Clinton in the last 4 years. When you're chief of staff to the president, people want to see the president. They come to you. And so he's had ample opportunity to be informed. He doesn't be shown everything. Be informed that, yes, there is an ET present. This is an issue. We're going to have to deal with it. That's all he needs to know.
And what would it take to leverage truth out of, let's say, Majestic 12, assuming that something like it still exists and that it has a policy of denial in the interest of national security?
Well, there are a lot of things leveraging it. One, the fact that other nations are looking increasingly like they may go ahead and announce disclosure themselves, independent of us. Two, the media is starting to cover this issue like crazy. I've logged in over 1,000 mainstream news articles this year alone. I'm up to 981. Witnesses keep coming forward. And, of course, George keeps bringing people like me on to blab about the issue, you know, over and over again.
I don't let it go.
He isn't going to give up. But I believe that there's plenty of people inside that want to move forward. What is needed is we need to add a little leverage to make sure that the Democrats don't change their mind or have their feet turned to clay because of some invasion, some bomb going off somewhere, whatever. In other words, we don't want events to intercede it. We want disclosure in the spring. And in that regard, it's interesting. Barack Obama brings four very significant strengths to the potential role of disclosure president. Here they are. First, if the United States is going to be the first nation to disclose, and if you're going to essentially tell not just the U.S. citizens but the world, all right, that, yes, there are extraterrestrials here, and we've known about it, but we couldn't tell you for national security reasons, but now we're going to tell you now. It would be helpful if that person was held in very high regard by most of the rest of the world. And guess what? It turns out he is. His Q rating out there is off the charts, okay? I don't recall we've had a president with this kind of Q rating in terms of if people of foreign nations. Perhaps Reagan. Okay?
It's been a long time.
Secondly, if you're going to go to a world that is overwhelmingly filled with people of color and tell them there's extraterrestrials here engaging the human race, it might help if the person telling them, or at least the person in charge of the nation telling them, is a person of color. All right? Third, Barack Obama is an innocent on the issue. I have no doubt that he hasn't the slightest idea, or at least he has no information whatsoever, and may not have even thought that much about the ET issue. There's nothing in his career that shows that. That's a huge asset. Why? Because when such a president says, I've dealt with people with inside the intelligence community, we've gotten this information, we're bringing it to you now, the people can't rise up and then yell at him, well, why didn't you tell us before? Right. Why, you knew about this before. Why didn't you tell us? No. I've learned it. I've told you. Oh, that's wonderful. That's really
when
good.
I found out about it, that's what he'll
when
say.
When I find out about it. Now, these are substantial assets, all right? So in many ways, he makes an excellent disclosure president. Fine. Now, but the world is complicated. That's why, as part of the global disclosure movement, you know, it's not my disclosure movement. It's a global disclosure movement. The PRG's latest initiative is to make sure we close the deal on this. We want it in the spring of next year, early in the administration, because if the administration doesn't do it early, that truth embargo is going to become their truth embargo by the next winter.
But they've got some rough issues ahead of that.
They've got, Steve,
economy, Iraq, Afghanistan.
I can make the case. I can make, you know, give me 4 hours, George, and I'll make a case that this could help them in every single one of those issues.
You really think so?
You get disclosure, you get that ET tech. And if the energy systems are as good as we think they are, if they're good enough that after a reasonable period of transition, you can help people heat their home every winter for $4 a month. If you can bring the price of gasoline down during the transition to the new energy systems down to 80 cents a gallon, you have solved an enormous amount
of
problems. You've
also saved GM and Ford at the same time.
All kinds of stuff. You know the impact that technological revolutions have had on industry and countries and countries' ability to generate wealth. Well, that stuff is there for us, but it's sitting in the military research labs underground in the West, classified up the yin-yang because, well, if it were to become known, people would want to know where it came from, and there goes the truth embargo. And the truth embargo, no more barrier. And so the situation now is ripe. We must close this deal. So, million facts on Washington, home-based at factsonwashington.org.
F-A-X.
Provides all the information for anyone in the world, anyone in the world, we don't care who, love it, out of the country, love it, to send a letter, best, facts better, email better than nothing, to the president-elect's senatorial office, which is fully in play, saying, I want disclosure. I want that technology. I want you to be fully briefed. If they tell you don't have a right to know, fire them. Get somebody that tells you you do have a right to know. And I want congressional hearings for the witnesses that are ready to testify. We want these things, and we want them now, all right? Now, the letters are coming in. I've already gotten 200 notices already, just 2 days. I've sent my letter. Now, what I don't know is how many people are sending a correspondence and not notifying PRG.
Right.
I don't know the
right
ratio. But, hey, we got 77 days. We're going to pursue this all the way through to January 20th. People are coming on board every day. In fact, Shirley McLean, very fired up about this recent election, got in touch with me. I'm going to interview her. I think it'll turn up on her website and her stream at 5 or 6 p.m. on Sunday. We're going to be talking about Obama, talking about the million facts. I think I'm getting some links on her site and so forth. So she's on board. She's excited.
Tell her hi for us. She was on our show 6-7 months ago.
I got interviewed by Roll Call Magazine, the number one newspaper on the Hill. I'm getting other media calls. I've already done 37 interviews, and, of course, yours was key. That was on November the 2nd, that's Sunday night,
right,
just before the election. We got a Facebook page up, a Facebook group page, Million Facts on Washington. Got about 500 members, more coming in all the time. Facebook is spreading the word. It's starting to filter through the networks and Facebook. Mm-hmm. Can we get a million letters and faxes by January 20th? Of course we can.
Yes, you can.
When the media starts seeing that mail, and I'm going to be posting, by the way, a lot of those letters on my website very soon, after getting permission, of course. When they start seeing this mail, and it starts pouring in week after week after week, do you think the media is going to say, well, you know, there's no story here? And the next thing you know, they're going to be asking the president-elect, what do you think about these questions?
In Texas, we've had two big flaps with both projections and close-up and all kinds of aerial activity that clearly falls in the UFO category, with jets pursuing them. What do you think, if the non-human phenomenon, whatever it is, whatever the source, would act now, between now and the spring? Do you think it would be good or bad?
Depends on what you mean by act. I mean, I get a sense that the boys upstairs are moving the process along, you know? I mean, when they start flying stuff around to Crawford Ranch, I think that's a message. You know, it's not like that they stopped, landed, and started handing out press releases or anything. You know, hey, look, we're here. We're going to be, you know, out in the open pretty soon. Get your butt in motion. No. But they're turning up around the Crawford. They got jets flying around, all this stuff. And the government's having to say, ah, what jets? We don't know from jets. Everybody's embarrassed. They're pushing the thing. Now, would they do something dramatic, like park a mothership over Montana?
Or all over the world.
That would be a terrible thing. Because if they do an act like that and force disclosure before the governments of the world have done their job and initiated disclosure themselves, they disrupt, literally break, every social contract of every nation in the world, where the people can look at the government and say, man, you stink. Right? You lied to us. You didn't tell us about it. You still haven't told us about it. Now they're flying motherships over my town. What the hell? Why do I want to pay you any money anymore? You talk about disruption. On the other hand, if the governments come forward properly and say, yes, we've known about this. Here's what we know. What more do you want to know? Here's some new technology. Look forward to that 80-cent a gallon gas. And go, that's good. And then they start thinking about it for a couple of years, 3-4 years. And after a while, it's like old news. The news cycle on this will only last so long, too. And after the news cycle is over and nobody wants to hear about the ETs anymore, they can park all the motherships up there they want. Most people go, hey, great, the motherships are here. I make the joke, but, you know, they're finding all these planets out there.
They're finding them every month.
It used to be, we don't know if there's any planets out there. Now, oh, man, we got 25 today.
Now they're finding Earth.
Yeah. Then they'll project, oh, there's 46 billion planets. And, you know, guess what? In the galaxy out there over the last 50 million years, lots of planets, just like ours, have gone through the same thing. This is not new. Life emerges, it evolves, it develops sophistication, it develops brain power, it becomes sentient, it develops technology, it learns about the rest of the galaxy. This is not a big deal. It's just a big pain. And so we need to get on with it. We need to birth this baby and get on with building a civilization, probably in concert with these entities. Now, if it turns out that they don't like us and they want to come down and, you know, open up a can on us, well, I would prefer that all of us were there to take them on rather than simply standing there and want to know what's going on when the hammer comes down. And then we get an email from the government say, oh, you know, we meant to tell you about these guys, but, you know, we didn't think you could handle the truth. Well, they're here. They're taking over. Sorry. Thank you. We're leaving for, you know, whatever.
And we know historically that does not seem to be where the evidence is. In fact, if there is evidence, it is that what we're dealing with now goes back 5,000 years and probably a lot longer, and that it's been interacting with this planet for a very long time. And we just happen to be now really waking up to it beyond gods and mythology.
In 1999, a good colleague of mine, whose name you will know but I cannot mention, took me aside and explained to me how he had learned just recently that the government, this was under Clinton. Remember, this would have been toward the end of the Clinton administration, a couple years after the end of the Rockefeller Initiative, that one of the agencies, I don't know, had actually signed a contract and delivered a project to a major public relations firm in Washington, D.C. And the assignment was, tell us how we can disclose this thing and look good. Okay, the essentially the exopolitical public relations of disclosure. That was 1999. The problem right now is not chaos. It's not people going crazy. It's not the collapse of religion. The problem is good public relations for the government that does this. And the issue right now for our government is that most of the bad public relations is with us. It's all good for China if they announce. It's all good for France if they announce. And in the UK, and if you're paying attention out there, the Vatican might even announce. I mean, the recent Vatican astronomer said, we got no trouble with ETs. Do you think he just woke up in the morning one day and said, you know, I think I'll call up the media and tell them we're cool with ETs. You know, I don't think I'll call the Pope. He doesn't need to know that. This is all happening for a reason.
Made me wonder what is coming down.
But if France or China or the UK announce, then the U.S. basically is just coming along for the ride. We are irrelevant. We have just announced the fact that we don't matter anymore. You know, we can tell you lies all day long. When it comes to telling the truth, we're not in the truth business here. France is in that business now. China's in the truth business. They got a 16% growth rate. They got men in space. They tell the truth all the time. Forget about us. We're old news. You know, we're going to make the collapse of the British Empire look like, you know, a prom dance. Uh-uh. I don't think that's a good thing. I think America still needs to be a major leader in this world, because the best strengths of America are incredibly important. And if we lose our leadership role, those strengths are going to have to be come from somewhere else. And I don't think they're there yet. And so it's not only in our interest, but in the world's interest, if we assert our leadership here and do what we need to do. We took the mantle of the truth embargo over. They deferred to us, okay, complete the deal, end the embargo, start the transition, right? A little reform of the national security complex is called for. A reform of the media is called for, so this never happens again. A reform of academia is called for, so we never have the entire university and college system get on board a government propaganda program for national security reasons and stick with it for 5 decades. No, I never do that. And I think in about 4 or 5 years, it's going to look pretty good around here. Now, as it happens, the man who was, you know, took the chair when the music stopped is Barack Obama. So does he have the potential to become the greatest president of all time? He has the potential to become the greatest leader of any nation of all time, because he's coming in at the most profound event in human history at a time when enormous changes are needed, huge opportunities are there, and technically the means, the basis to do it is all there. We have the people's interest, we've got the internet, we've got worldwide involvement and cooperation and connections. If he plays his cards right, I mean, they're going to have to build a statue to him about 2 miles high.
And he's got good cards to play.
Hopefully. Now, can he be corrupted? Yes. Are there Dick Morris lizards in Washington, D.C. love to go higher on to him and tell him what to do? Yes. Will he stay away from that? Let us hope so. But what I see so far, I'm impressed.
It is politics, Stephen.
But George and Steve, what if Barack Obama is presented with a debriefing by MJ-12, mm-hmm. all of them?
Yeah.
And he comes away and he says, no, I'm signing an executive order that will classify this for another 5 generations in the interest of national security.
Let me step out.
I don't even think they'll tell him.
No,
I don't think they tell standing presidents.
No. But that's the way it used to be, not now. Let me step out of line here and say something that, you know, I could be wrong about, but I feel strongly about. This is going to happen in the spring, not because Barack Obama goes to the military intelligence management committees and says, well, I'm going to do this. It's going to happen because the people in the military management committees are going to go to him and say, you're going to do this.
Mm. Why would they do that, Steve?
Because if they don't do it and we don't get that technology, their problems are going to become big time. And the United States' problems are going to come big time. And the vast majority of all the people, even in the deepest realms of the black budget world, are patriots. And they don't want to see the country go down. And they also don't want to see France be the disclosure nation. And the time is now. And so they're going to tell him to do it. And I think he's the kind of man that is going to be fine with that. I mean, I don't think he would say no or even back down. However, it's a complex world. Now, it would be very helpful for when that meeting comes. And I think John Podesta will have the initial meetings. And he'll be the one that will liaise. And then eventually Obama will be brought in. But when the time comes for the final decision to be made, are we going to proceed or not? I would like to have 1 million faxes and emails sitting in the transition office of Barack Obama in a big giant pile that has already been reported in a number of press from the American people saying, yeah, I think we can handle the truth and we have a right to know. Would you please go ahead with this?
Let's try to get Podesta on the show, Stephen. Let's give it a try.
Can't lose.
We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. UFO researcher Richard Dolan, very well degreed, and he has now finished part 1 and 2 of his published 500-page study, UFOs and the National Security State, now working on 3, as a matter of fact. His historical narrative explores the national security dimensions of the UFO phenomenon, and Richard is here for the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference.
You know, earlier, John Alexander was saying that from his point of view, he knew that all of our radar systems, all of our military information gathering systems for at least 5 or 6 decades have picked up anomalous phenomena that would be categorized in the UFOs. But yes. On the other hand, he says that he has never been able to find anybody in government who had actual documentation, photographs, or proof that this phenomena suggests. And it raises for me, to somebody who is a historian and you've got this new book that's going to come out, mm-hmm. what is the best evidence coming to you from the military itself, firsthand knowledge, that we are dealing with something that would fall into the category, I'm going to use those words in documents, extraterrestrial biological entities.
Yes, Linda. Well, I would say in the new book that I have coming out, which is Volume 2 of UFOs in the National Security State, this is another second 500-page history dealing with the UFO phenomenon from the early 1970s up to the end of the Cold War, 1991. It's a really good break-off point. One of the things that I would say is I've got about 170 to 175 military encounters that I've delineated in this book, most of which are based on very, very strong primary document sources, a few of which are less solid, but a good 100 at least are based on very, very solid data that show military encounters with UFOs. Now, these are from countries around the world. They're not all the United States. They're from everywhere.
And what would be the strongest in your mind?
Well, there are several cases where we know for sure that pilots have fired missiles at UFOs, and these missiles have had absolutely no effect, but we continue to fire on them. So clearly there's some kind of trouble in paradise, and we know that there's some activity going on that's not officially supposed to be happening. You have cases in the U.S., in South America, in Europe, the Middle East. There was the famous case in 1976 over Tehran in Iran where a pilot launched a missile at the object as he was about to launch it. As he was about to launch the missile, all of his electronics and communication systems went offline. This has happened many, many times. So to argue that there's no cover-up, there's no conspiracy, I cannot understand this argument where you have military forces around the world clearly knowing that they are supposed to go after these unknown objects. There's obviously a policy in place. When John Alexander earlier in the show mentioned that all of the data, all of the sources of collection are tracking anomalous objects, that was the single most significant thing that I think he said in that interview. There are other things that I chatted with him after his interview and before this one with me about some of the things that he said, and in a friendly way, I did take issue with him. In particular, the fact that he said that there's no evidence of missing trillions of dollars. I said to him, look, how can you say that when you have statements of Donald Rumsfeld in 2001, and not only that, because the Rumsfeld statement gets quoted many times, but through the 1990s, there were four or five major statements by congressional groups and Pentagon groups that mentioned trillions of missing dollars. So this is not something that Rumsfeld just pulled out of nowhere. And I didn't really get a satisfactory answer on that question. So there are many, many things that go beyond our official tallying of what is our government. There's overwhelming evidence that we have a black government that is not subject to oversight, or at least sufficient oversight. And this money just goes into the hole. Who knows where it comes out? We're not dealing with the official system of government as I think we all grew up believing that we had.
And do you think right now with this new change to Barack Obama as the new president-elect, do you think there's a leverage point coming up here in this coming year?
I think it's possible. I think it is possible, yeah. I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't wager that it's going to happen. I would give it less than 50%. But I've discussed this with my good friend Stephen Bassett for many, many years. And I have to say, I think if there's going to be a point to do it, this would be the time. This really would be an excellent time to make a voluntary disclosure. We are in the middle of a tremendous sea change in American politics at this time.
And world politics.
Yes, absolutely, and the world. And so
India is going around the moon right now for the next 2 years. India is going to have a craft orbiting the moon.
They're going to map the moon better than we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. America is in danger of losing its real edge over the other nation. I mean, for 50-plus years, if you're going to do something in space, it was going to be America or the Soviet Union. And that is no longer the case.
Well, I told Richard Hoagland that my prediction is Obama will accelerate our space program dramatically. That's my guess. Hmm. It's good PR. John Kennedy did it. He will, too.
But where are they going to get the money?
They just make it.
and the dollar goes down.
There's
nothing behind it. They just make
money.
It. They call up their friends at the Federal Reserve and they say, "You print it. Well, don't worry about it."
You know, when you put it that way, George, I start to wonder now.
Maybe 25 years from now, the dollar will be back.
It sounded good at first.
That's what they'll do.
Well, in terms of there's the military body, and then as you evolve up into the Cold War, and there have been assertions by some people in the so-called Majestic 12 group that said that the United States and Russia had a concocted Cold War in order to cover up the extraterrestrial issue that both countries were concerned about, and that the United States had a Cold War in order to do ET technology and research in which we needed some help with Russia.
Well,
or Soviet Union then.
Maybe. I would agree that I don't interpret the Cold War in a conventional way. I don't see it as a standard U.S. against the Soviet Union. I do believe that there were agreements behind the scenes, and that there is a, you know, part of that agreement meant mutual hegemony in each of their spheres, and they were both quite happy with that arrangement. And I think there's probably more behind the scenes control by, let's call them elite groups, that could very well have been pulling strings on both sides of the Iron Curtain. That's possible. Whether the ET connection is part of it or not, I wouldn't know, Linda. It would be hard for me to say one way or the other. But we have to know this, that the UFO phenomenon is the great elephant in the dining room that's never mentioned. It's a huge part of our national security history, and yet it never gets discussed in official media, official academic sources. It's as if it doesn't exist, but it does exist. And so, therefore, we have to assume it has a large covert footprint on our history.
And why is it so threatening?
It's threatening because it's threatening now because after 60 years of secrecy, it just would blow too many interests away that have benefited from that secrecy. I think that the reasons for the secrecy evolved over many years. I do think that in the 1940s, it would be very logical for the president, say Harry Truman, to, when presented with the information of, you know, alien beings and we've recovered exotic technology, he might just logically say, all right, let's study this, let's decide what we want to do about it, let's not panic people yet, let's figure out what we're dealing with. Okay. And then he would gather together an elite group of individuals, say you, and let's figure this out and, all right, come up with a contingency plan and so on.
MJ-12.
Absolutely. But then the problem with that, something that may have started legitimately as a public interest or at least a national security interest in the legitimate sense, easily develops its own momentum and its own profit. And so what I think happens is once you've got this secret, let's say you've got this exotic technology, well, you can't figure it out, but maybe after 10 years you figure out a few things. And now you've got a great ground floor investment opportunity. You've got a great power leverage over the world and so on.
Becomes self-serving.
Exactly, and your incentive for giving up the secret vanishes. And then, of course, then there's the once you give up the secret, then you get the anger aspect. You get a lot of angry people. Why have you kept the secret all this time? Think about the rumors of, say, the B-2 bomber, which have long been rumored to have some version of electrostatic gravitic working with it to reduce drag to save fuel. Think about, this is a simple matter. You and I privately have talked about this.
That's right.
All right? The lawsuits that would be involved dealing with commercial airlining, which has been denied this for generations.
Right.
All right? That's a lot of fuel being blown out the air. And when we're looking at the petroleum situation right now, this is a serious issue. So there, once any president comes out and says, it has come to my knowledge that the UFO phenomenon is legitimate and indeed that there are extraterrestrial beings living among us, you can't just, you know, say, well, okay, well, I'm going to go on vacation. You have many, many issues to deal with. You're going to have many angry people, at least in the short term. Sure, in the long term, we all understand it's probably a very good thing. It will be a good thing for us because we've got to get the truth out. But in the short term, there are many powerful interests that clearly are not going to want, they're going to have the boat rocked on them, and they don't want that.
And they have to come up with some sort of a context for that first press conference that not only explains and says we're not alone, that we have had non-humans coming and going on this planet for a long time, but in the same breath, they have to neutralize any possibility of fear.
Well, right, and that's especially difficult when you go through the literature of the UFO phenomenon. And again, a lot of this is in my next book, UFOs and the National Security State. There's a certain amount of fear factor response that people have when they deal with these UFOs or the ET beings. It's a very easy way to destabilize a person if they're not ready for it. It's not clear that everyone is going to be able to deal with this as well as everybody else. We're going to have a large variation in how people come to grips with this.
Richard, 500-page study of parts one and two. You've got part three.
Each one is 500
each
pages,
one. So
yes.
We're talking about 1,000 and another 500
that is
probably
right.
coming.
That's right.
What was, in everything you looked at and found, discovered, what was the one case, the one issue that just was mind-boggling for you?
Oh, God.
And I'm sure there were many, but...
Well, some of the freakier things that I dealt with had to do with the career of Ingo Swann. I did a bit of study of Ingo. I had the opportunity and pleasure to meet with him. Ingo Swann's Mr. Axelrod story is one that has not left my consciousness. It's a fascinating story. It's obvious you're familiar with it. For those who haven't heard it, it's to summarize. Back in the mid-1970s, when Ingo Swann was doing all kinds of remote viewing for all different agencies, it wasn't just all at SRI, he got requests quite frequently, he said. He got this one from a friend of his who said, when you get a phone call from a Mr. Axelrod, I strongly suggest that you follow up and do this. Mm-hmm. So he did, 3 in the morning. Axelrod's secretary said, can you be at the Smithsonian the next morning at the Elephant? He goes, long story short, he does remote viewing for this person at an underground base. He doesn't know where he's going because he's been blindfolded. Very bizarre. He meets with Axelrod for a couple of different occasions. The impression that I get is that Axelrod wanted Ingo to remote view the moon. And this was because Ingo Swann had recently remote viewed Jupiter and had correctly ascertained many, many factors about Jupiter before our first probe ever reached it, including the existence of a planetary ring, which was denied by shocked scientists. So Ingo does all this remote viewing for Axelrod, and then Axelrod just disappears. And I have got to say that I have never had the feeling that Axelrod was what he appeared to be, which was a straight-up human being working for some deep black agency. There were bizarre things about this guy and the so-called twins that he had working with him.
Right.
And I've never shaken this story.
You think he was an E.T.?
I wonder. Because here's why. Because just pretend that you and I, we're E.T.s, and Linda is a top-notch remote viewer, and we discover that she has the ability to learn things about
us.
Yeah. Right? So what would
at
we want to do?
Any place in the universe.
Right. Would we want to send a counterintelligence team to check her out and find out how good is she? Mm-hmm. Do we have anything to deal with here? And this is what I wonder.
Yeah.
So that's a story, and Ingo wrote about this in one of his books.
Penetration.
And I worked with that, and I had the opportunity to talk with Ingo, and I included that in my book. That's in summary form.
And it suggests something that I've been told and others, that one of our government's greatest concerns is who is walking around on this planet that looks human but is not.
Yes. It's such a funny thing. When I think about the road that I've personally, all of us have traveled an odd road in this field, and I am no exception. 15 years ago, I started this transient interest in UFOs as a very, very nuts and bolts kind of person. I remain that way in my orientation, my historical study. But what one finds is that this is not a simple field, and there are many, many bizarre things going on. And part of the problem with disclosure is that any president is going to have to tell the world what is the current intelligence on what we think the nature of these beings are.
And their agendas.
And this is not necessarily an easy thing
to deal
with.
It's not good timing for that either right now. I'm not sure we can handle something.
Is there ever a good time?
Yeah.
What I think is going to happen is that our society is moving so fast technologically, socially, politically, that there's going to be something is going to happen. We're not going to will it, but it's going to will itself upon us.
I do think people would say, I knew it. I don't think the shock value would be there as it might have been in the 60s.
Well, I would agree, and I think one has to wonder, is there kind of a preparation program in place in conjunction with Hollywood to prep people?
We've always suspected
this.
Spielberg, for example,
right,
being in on this.
Right.
And Steven Spielberg is coming online with a company to do a quote-unquote paranormal website.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh.
It's been a long time in the works for him.
Okay. Well.
And why? That was exactly what went into my head. Why is he doing this now?
Because people love to watch that and listen.
Well, maybe something is coming and unfolding.
People love it, but as escapist, or because maybe they just sense deep down that there's something in this world that they know is true that is being denied to them.
Well, I was bringing it up because what does Steven Spielberg really know from Reagan?
Well, right. There's the story, of course, relating to the screening of the movie E.T.
That's right.
And Spielberg told this to Jamie Chandray, if I'm not mistaken, that when the movie was screened at the Reagan White House in 1983, I believe, Reagan came up to Spielberg afterward and said, there aren't six people in this whole room who know how true that movie is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So if Spielberg now in 2008 going into 2009, who's been active in feature films and has done some of the most astonishing, is now going to be involved in a website that is going to be focused on UFOs and paranormal, I'm just curious about what is the timing in the face of everything else that's going on this planet. Because he obviously has been in on some inside info.
Soon enough, and we will be there, Linda. Richard Dolan, thank you for being here today.
My pleasure, George. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
And Linda, thank you for being on the program.
It's fun, and it's been great to be in the studio face-to-face again.
And thanks to Ryan Wood, Dr. John Alexander, Nick Pope, and Stephen Bassett, and all those who have been participating at this incredible UFO Crash Retrieval Conference. I mean, it is truly remarkable.
It is. It's a mind-expanding. This conference is really one of the best.
The Woods have concentrated on bringing top-notch caliber guests here, and they've done it again.
Yes.
And,
sixth year, and Ryan said it'll be 10.
Goal. That's right.
Really? Great.
He expects disclosure, full disclosure, within the next 4 years.
That was his original plan.
So who knows?
I think 4 years is possible.
It could very well happen. So anyways, thanks to both of you for being on the show.
Thank you for your
extra duty. Up next, some of your intriguing phone calls from days gone by. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.